Welcome to Scary Stories, the channel that tells you scary stories.
Scary Stories by Peter Bernard. Number one.
True Jersey Devil Story is told to Peter Bernard, read by P.Q. Ribber. When I was younger, I was on the run from the law. I don't want to get into it, but let's just say I eventually got things worked out and no longer have that cloud hanging over me. But this is a story about the time I was on the run from the law. Back then, I was hiding out in this patch of forest to the west of Vineland, located around Parvin Mill Road. It was a lake there, probably still is, that I would use for water and for bathing. I stole food from various sources and slept in a tiny tent I kept in my big backpack. I never wanted to camp in the same area two nights in a row because I wanted to stay unnoticed, but I would try whenever possible to stay close to the lake. I'm looking at Google as I'm telling you this, and I'm 90% sure the lake I'm referring to is called Parvin Lake. It's between the church and the farm, but on the other side, further away from the golf course. It was hardly wilderness, it was a state park. But there were just enough trees to hide me from the authorities and the people using the park for the few weeks or a month I needed to lay low there. So one night, I'm sitting near my tiny tent behind some bushes, enjoying a stunning view of the lake, when I heard someone or something jumping around in the brush behind me. The sound was faint, but sounded like it would be loud if I were close, so my alarm bells were going off. It had been a full moon the night before, and the night was fairly bright. I never lit a campfire, for obvious reasons, so I figured I might as well just sit tight and hope that whoever or whatever that was might not notice me here if I were still and quiet enough. The crashing in the brush behind me occupied 100% of my attention, even though I kept my eyes on the lake while listening. I had never heard a noise like it. I wondered if it might be an injured animal or maybe more than one man, but it really didn't sound like either. The longer the sound went on, the more unnerved it made me because I just couldn't, in my head, match it up with the source of any animal I was familiar with. One point or another, the sound got suddenly much louder, then stopped. I looked in the direction of the sound, and that was the first time I saw it. It had a kind of horse's head, but it had hands it was holding in front of itself, like a tyrannosaur or a velociraptor, you know, from the dinosaur movies. Clawed hands, which meant that unless it was a centaur, it must be standing up like a man on its hind legs. I couldn't see it from its belly downwards because the foliage was blocking my view, but that thing had a muscular chest like a bodybuilder. My head was spinning as I wondered what the hell a furry velociraptor with a horse head was doing in the state park when I remembered the Jersey Devil was supposed to have a horse's head. I think I gasped when I made that realization because the thing turned and looked in my direction. I'm not sure if it saw me, but I dropped down to the ground and crawled commando style as quietly as I could under a big shrubbery-type plant, then laid on my back facing up so that if the devil came my way, I could possibly defend myself with my knife. I heard it scream loudly and tear through the brush in my direction angrily. Time stood still as I remembered everything that had ever happened in my life. Even the sad or messed up parts all seemed preferable to this. I remember being in police custody with warm nostalgia. I forgave the cop who made my handcuffs too tight, then kicked me from behind so I went face first into the concrete wall. I thought of how much I would give to be back there with that utter dick instead of where I was now, laying in the mud waiting to be eaten alive by a mythical creature that nobody had believed in for 100 years. got louder and louder, and the blood in my ears got louder as well. A voice in my head said, "Turn and face your fate like a man." So, having no better idea, I looked over to my right in the direction of the sound. It brayed furiously, so loud that it hurt my ears, and I'm not ashamed to admit, I peed my pants. It was moving so fast and making so much noise, I don't think it noticed me at all. As it arrived directly next to me, it leaped over me. I thought, the Jersey Devil really can fly. And I guess I must have fainted. The last thing I remember seeing was it taking off in the air over me. I didn't see its wings, but then again I was preoccupied with fainting like a baby. Still, it must have had wings because it flew over me. When I woke up, it was dawn, and there were birds singing. I took stock of myself, and other than the strong urine stench, I was fine. The devil must have flown off thinking I was running from it, and fortunately never smelled or saw me at all. Even though the danger had passed, my nostalgia for the county jail had not. Suddenly, serving my time seemed a hell of a lot less frightening than being on the run. The life of a fugitive had just lost all its romantic nature, and so after finishing the stolen food I had left in my backpack, I hiked my butt over to the police station in Elmer, a bit north of there, and turned myself in. The next 7.5 years were complete hell, and there were days when I actually missed that terrifying night in the park near the lake. But when my time behind bars was done, I was one of the lucky guys who actually got good work and was able to put my life back together. Not many who can get out can stay out, and fewer still can prosper the way I have. Really, without getting into details, my life these days is a lot better than I deserve, and I consider myself obscenely lucky. But I would have none of these good things in life if I hadn't had the piss scared out of me by this monster that couldn't possibly exist. I guess I owe my life to the Jersey Devil.
Scary story by Peter Bernard.
Dogman in New Jersey? As told to Peter Bernard, read by P.Q. River. This story took place in Wharton State Forest in New Jersey back in summer 2001, a few months before 9/11 happened. I lost my sister and two friends in the World Trade Center, so I tend to measure things in terms of pre-9/11 and post-9/11. One of my friends who died in the WTC later was with me that day. Let's call him Phil. And he brought along his fiancée that he never lived long enough to marry. I hate telling this story. Not because I'm afraid people will think I'm crazy for saying I saw a monster, but because it reminds me of how much I still miss Phil. We used to camp in the forest since we were teenagers, and by this time we were old men in our later 20s, so we were pretty set in our ways. We each brought our own tent and half the supplies, and would stay in the most remote places we could manage to hike to. Phil's fiancée, we'll call her Cinnamon, also loved staying out all night in the forest, but she owned a Winnebago Chieftain with a microwave, a TV, state-of-the-art VHS player, fancy shower she had specially built for her, all the modern conveniences her ample Wall Street salary could buy. I was dead set against sleeping in a camper, so we compromised and convinced Cinnamon we'd camp in our tents right outside the Winnebago. This way we could run inside if anything too scary happened. I figured I was humoring the lady. I didn't actually expect anything bad to happen, since nothing bad had ever happened to me or Phil on any of our previous excursions. The two of us built a fire to roast s'mores after Cinnamon's sumptuous microwave TV dinner feast, and we were surprised when Ms. Diva herself actually came out into the forest proper to sit under the moon with us and enjoy the evening air. I'd brought some craft beer that an old buddy of mine and Phil's had brewed, and soon even Cinnamon had loosened up. We were telling old stories and enjoying each other's company. After a while, I felt familiar enough with Cinny and drunk enough in general that I just asked her outright, "Why, if you love nature, do you stay inside a Winnebago all the time instead of in nature?" "Oh, she's got good reasons, dude, believe me," Phil squirted out nervously. "In fact," he continued, "it's a story that's kind of a little too creepy to tell here in the middle of nowhere. Let her tell you the story next week over lunch in the city." Both Cinnamon and I began teasing Phil that he was a scaredy cat and a chicken, until he relented and gave Cinnamon permission to finally explain to me why she only camps out behind metal and glass in her trailer. "Well, it was years ago in a forest very much like this one," she began, and I settled back, ready to hear the tale. "I was camping, much like you two do, with my Uncle Freddy. We had two small tents and precious little else with us. This was our fourth time out in the forest alone, and even though I was only 12 years old, I felt very comfortable in the wilderness as long as Uncle Freddy was there. We always found the closest ranger and introduced ourselves before setting up camp, and Freddy made me memorize and describe to him how I could reach the ranger in an emergency if anything should happen to him. We were both very proud of our foresight and our ability to plan things out logically. What could possibly go wrong for two brilliant, careful people like us? So on that night, we found out exactly what could go wrong." "Get to the story already," I whined. "My beer's getting warm." "Shh, don't spoil the spooky mood," Phil admonished me. "Okay, all right," I relented, "but please finish before I have to pee. Deal?" Cinnamon jokingly agreed and returned to her story. "So, Uncle Freddy was telling me a ghost story from when he was a kid. He said that when the ghost was there, you could tell before it did even anything. He said you could hear the air change, whatever that meant. And he said the ghost would throw rocks at them from the ceiling. It had good aim, and the neighbors thought his parents beat him because he always had bruises on his face from the ghost's rocks. And just as he said that, I swear to God, a rock flew into our camp from somewhere. I was terrified because I thought it was the ghost from Uncle Freddy's story. But Uncle Freddy didn't think that. He got up really angry, stood up and shouted, 'Think you're funny? Think you're funny?' And just then a small rock zipped across the forest and hit him right on the cheek, knocking him backward. I screamed over and over. That's all I remember doing. Uncle Freddy stood up again and started cursing, using nasty words I'd never heard before. He said, 'You ain't nothing but a punk-ass teenager. If you think you're so big and bad, why don't you come out here and fight like a real man?' And so right then, his adversary did step out of the forest. Wasn't a ghost like I thought, and it wasn't like a punk teenager like Uncle Freddy thought. It was the tallest, hairiest man I had ever seen. My first instinct was to run, but Uncle Freddy told me never to run from something that can eat you. It only makes them hungrier, so I stood my ground and looked to Freddy to see what we should do. He stood there just looking, with his mouth hanging open. Then he grabbed my hand and we ran, running through the thorn bushes and banging our heads on tree branches in the dark. I'm sure the monster could have caught us easily, but fortunately for us, he was just happy we were leaving his turf. We made it to the ranger station in no time and told him the story. He gave us a place to sleep and told us he'd head back to our camp in the morning to guard us as we pack up our tents and equipment. Well, I tell you, the next morning our camp was shredded. The tents were ripped, our food was either gone or strewn around, even our compasses and camera had been stomped into oblivion. Now, I still love nature, but what I do not like is accidentally being on the turf of an 8-foot-tall apex predator. I pack my Winnebago to face the way I came in, so that when someone or something asks me to leave, they never have to ask twice. I was about to ask her if she'd ever had anything like that ever happen again when the quiet of the forest was interrupted by the loudest barking I'd ever heard. I call it barking because I don't know what else to call it. It sounded almost like language. If a dog or wolf could speak, I'd imagine it sounding like this sound. Whatever was being said, it was without a doubt an angry message. "What was that?" Phil asked, jumping to his feet. "Damn it, I told you this was not the place for that kind of story." Cinnamon insisted we all pile in the Winnebago, and I was in no mood to argue. I stomped out the fire as quickly as I could while the other two went inside. In the last light of the dying fire, I saw what was making the barking language. It was a dog, or it had a long snout like a dog, but the problem is that dogs don't stand up like people, and this thing was standing up. Suddenly it turned and looked at me and then screamed. I ran toward the trailer, and the thing ran up right behind me. As I grabbed the door, it scratched my back. Screaming in pain, I flung myself inside, and the thing tried to come in after me. Phil fought and kicked at the braying beast until he was able to get the door shut on it. It tried to get in for a while, screaming ridiculously and insanely. Cinnamon was sitting in the corner crying, and I think we all felt like we were going to die. Got quiet outside after a while, and we wondered if the thing had left. Cautiously, I got up off the floor and peeked out the side window. The thing was right there waiting for me. It bellowed again, and then I swear it chest bumped the trailer. It did it again and again. It flung itself at the trailer, banging us with its chest. The thing was so strong, I thought it might actually push us off the road or even knock us over. So I yelled at Cinny to get me the expletive deleted keys, and I drove the HE double hockey sticks out of there. I heard it bark and scream at us one more time before we put some distance between us. Recently, I was surfing YouTube and I came upon videos about Dogman. I had no idea that was even a thing. Could that have been the thing that we saw? It had a long snout, two pointy ears that stood up, brownish fur, and the most terrifying claws I ever saw in any living creature. I have searched online and found nothing about Dogman appearing in New Jersey, so maybe that isn't what tried to kill us. The only thing I can tell you, for sure, is that a few months before 9/11, we saw something that shouldn't exist and couldn't possibly be there. And I've never gone out camping again in all these years since.
Scary Stories by Peter Bernard. Number 3. Vicious Vineland Villain, Malicious Marsupial Monstrosity. Read by Madeline Starr. Okay, this story goes back a ways in years. I don't want to say when it took place because then I'd have to reveal my current age, but let's just say this took place before I was of legal drinking age. I used to live back then in Vineland, New Jersey, and my favorite thing to do with my friends was go into the forest near the insane asylum and get wasted on liquor. We let this dorky kid Manny hang out with us because he was 21 and had an ID. There were three of us girls, Janice, Lanny, and Teresa, plus Manny and whoever Teresa was dating that week. She was the first of us to develop and consequently the first to get a string of boyfriends. She didn't have very good taste in boys, though, and they'd all drop her when they realized she was saving herself for marriage. Anyways, that was the bunch of us, more or less, on most weekends. We'd all chip in for Manny to get us some vodka and then buy a bunch of cans of soda and just pour vodka into the cans. Voila! Instant social entertainment if you were our age in that part of New Jersey during that era. Trust me, you kids don't know how lucky you have it these days. So, one night we were by the asylum. Well, it was really a mental home, not an asylum. The fence was only about 4 feet high, and the patients would often lean on it during the day and watch the forest around them. I once tried to have a conversation with one of them, but he just kept staring into the trees and muttering about the big, beautiful egg. Anyway, like I said, one late Friday afternoon in early autumn, we were getting wasted in the forest a few hundred feet behind the mental home, with Manny's car parked back on the road. It was starting to get pretty dark, but that never mattered to us. We'd usually stay till midnight, having a ball, and not remembering half of it by the next morning. We'd tell scary stories sometimes. Other times we'd walk around trying to imitate Bigfoot calls we had heard on TV, hoping that the mental patients would think they were surrounded by Sasquatch. One time we brought firecrackers with us to wake people up, and they shined a spotlight out into the forest looking for us while we hid. I guess we were a bunch of jerks, looking back on it. But this was before cell phones, and there really wasn't much else to do with yourself back then in New Jersey, except get an adult to buy you liquor, then proceed to go looking for trouble. Of course, this is the story of the night trouble came looking for me. Okay, now I'm remembering why I don't tell this story too often, because it's actually kind of embarrassing. Well, here goes nothing. I may as well not try to skate around the subject. That night, Manny got us beer instead of vodka. I had never drank beer before, and it wasn't long before I had to go to the bathroom. I suggested we drive to a gas station or something so I could use the bathroom. Everyone just laughed at me and said to go into the forest and pee. They were having too much fun to drive off. Besides, Manny wanted to sober up a bit before getting back behind the wheel. I don't want to get into details, but peeing in the woods isn't always as easy for girls as it is for boys, and it had gotten pretty dark already. Nevertheless, I had no choice, so I started crunching the autumn leaves and heading to the creepy darkness in search of some relief. Okay, so I was in a very vulnerable position doing my thing when I first heard it. Something big was crunching leaves. I tried to be as quiet as I could, and I listened. It was definitely getting louder with each crashing crunch. I tried to finish my business as fast as I could, but there are limits in nature, so I was still pulling my jeans back up when something behind me brayed in my ear, kind of like a horse, but not a horse, and it roughly pushed me forward. I landed on my face, my bare butt and legs up in the air behind me. The rest of my landing was even less graceful, and let's just say I don't want to describe it. I got halfway up and started running without looking behind me, but I tripped because of my pants and fell down again. This time I got up and pulled the jeans up, fastening them quickly, as I looked to see my attacker. It looked like some kind of deer or something sticking up from behind a bush. Then it leaped out into the open where I could see it, and I swear to God, it was a monster kangaroo. It was yelling at me in some threatening-sounding way, and holding out the hugest, scariest claws I ever saw in front of it. My mind thought, this is a radioactive kangaroo with malformed, giant claws, and I ran back to the others. I heard it scream once more behind me, but I don't think it even tried to pursue. Of course, nobody believed my story, but my freakout had ruined their good time, so we all drove back to Manny's place to watch his VHS copy of Rock and Roll High School again. The next day I went to the library and looked up pictures of kangaroos. That was definitely what I saw. And the claws I saw on it are actually what they look like on adult males. I had no idea what a dangerous animal a kangaroo could be. I'd only seen them looking cute on TV before, with their little babies in their little pockets. Well, trust me, there's a dark side to kangaroos, at least here in New Jersey. In fact, some of them can be outright jerks.
Come back, 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 come back,